Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and this show has always been dedicated to empowering us in one way or another to realize that sometimes life has challenges for us, but maybe they're there for the purpose of our discovering the greatness that really is within ourselves. This guest that I have today, she's calling in from Korea. Her name is Jin Robertson. Perhaps I should call her Dr. Jin. And her story, even though it's not yet been published, I was able to get her manuscript. She graciously sent it to me from Korea, and I read her story, and I could not have her on my show. I want to welcome her. Jin, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much. You sound so good.
We've got a great connection. It sounds like you're right here in my office with me.
I know.
Instead of being thousands of miles away in Korea. Jin, your manuscript, I know that you probably will have a different title on it when it's finally published. You started it with From Immigrant Housemaid to Harvard PhD, and this is your true story, Jin. Do you mind my calling you Jin, or would you rather have me call you Dr. Robertson?
Oh, come on, Donna. Jin sounds more friendly to me. Yeah.
Well, I always like to be sure. Always like to be sure.
Uh-huh.
Jin, it is not often that people really have the courage to speak their truth in such clarity or with such clarity as you do. When I was going through your manuscript, there were so many things that really, using an American slang, rang my chimes because of personal experiences I've had, of interactions with clients that I've known through the years who have come from Asia, whether it's Japan, China, Vietnam, it doesn't make any difference what part of Asia they come from. But it especially touched me deeply because I have had some very dear Korean friends. And I have been very much aware of what these women have had to go through in coming into the United States. But your story starts off with your being an unwanted baby in Korea. Mm-hmm. And your environment culturally was at the time you were born so terribly, terribly severe. And we so frequently will hear stories about how the Chinese didn't like their girl babies, the Koreans didn't like their girl babies. Give us a little bit of history. Why was this the case? Why do you feel, or do you know, why this particular cultural attitude evolved? Because when you were born, your grandmother wasn't too happy to see you.
No, not at all. actually, you know, the Korea had many histories and many countries went through. Before Joseon Dynasty, they didn't have the Confucian philosophy influence. You know, in Confucius philosophy, they discriminate against women and, you know, they discriminate about the lower society people and whole nine yards, and that was the main, religion. It's not really religion, but they consider that like a religion or philosophy of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So Joseon Dynasty time frame, you know, the mindset was set. The girls supposed to be, woman supposed to be subservient to men. And this Korea and Japan and China, all those countries were influenced by this Confucius philosophy. And they lived by that. Although there's no scientific proof that the woman's supposed to be subservient to the men, but still because of that philosophy, they accepted that as a just living, because once they were born into that Korean society in Joseon Dynasty, they were just brought up in that environment. They never questioned.
Mm-hmm.
So it just became common. And especially my grandma's case, she received, I guess, three girls before me. So she was put up. I mean, she was so angry. I mean, this army type, you know, expression coming out. But I think that was the main reason. The society itself was just discriminating against the woman. And I happened to be born in that time. But when I think about that, looking back, I was blessed. Just like what you were saying at the introduction, the you know, crises and difficult times and hard times are the time when you find out your true personality and true strength.
I agree. Mm-hmm. You have something that I stated in your book. I mean, there's so much in your material. It's just absolutely fabulous. But I want to quote one of your sentences. You say, when we are attentive to the subtle opportunities of choice presented in our everyday life, we can achieve our freedom. Attentive to the subtle opportunities of choice. Those are very, very powerful words. When you think of those words, that is something, if a person could absorb that, to be attentive to the subtle opportunities of choice, their life would have a sense of freedom about it that they wouldn't even have been able to recognize before.
That's right.
And that is what happened with you. But you walked a road of a lot of pain, a lot of tears. Your father, I mean, your family would be described in American culture as, whoa, are you dysfunctional? Well, I have yet to meet most people that haven't come from dysfunctional families of one type or another. But it's something that your mother, because of the role of women at that time, she ends up becoming a bartender or running a tavern because your dad couldn't make much in the way of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the history that you have in here regarding Korea, the life of the people, the occupation of the Japanese of Korea, and of course, there's so much more, and I'm just sort of skimming over it. But tell us about the relationship with your mother and your father, because it turned out being something that was far beyond what I ever would have expected. But your dad was a very special person. He was very supportive of you, wasn't he?
Yes. It was just an interesting and the relationship with mom and dad and me. And many people in Korea these days, because I am a celebrity now in Korea and they consider me successful, they are saying, if you met the real good parents, I'm sure you would have reached so far up. And I tell them, hey, they are the perfect parents for me.
That's right.
Because my mom, because of her attitude toward the girls and the discrimination against me, and made me work so hard at, you know, taking care of all the house chores. And if I didn't want to do that, or if I become lazy, and she will just whip me hard and show me the stars during the daytime. And so, but because I was afraid of my mom, and I I bore with that, and I went through it, and internally I became so strong. At the same time, my father, you know, whenever my mom said that girls are useless and I hate girls and all that stuff, and then my father always comments, you know, softly tell us, I think the girls are wonderful. I think she's beautiful. So it's like somebody is strengthening me at the same time, you know, kind of make me feel harsh. But at the same time, the someone who's so soft to come along and, you know, tenderly encouraging me, so that harshness disappears and the softness come in. Mm-hmm. So I become balanced, like outside, externally, people think I am so soft and, you know, nice, very, in a way, I guess they might think I might appear weak because I'm so soft. But internally, I'm hard like a rock. Almost.
That's right.
Yeah. That's all because of my parents. And the message I'm, you know, sending out to when I give speeches to the people are, they could be considered the worst parents, but it's up to you how to utilize them to make change your life worthwhile. So it's up to us.
Absolutely. And it's what you do with it. And you
yes.
can go through life being angry and miserable and just hateful and blame the world for everything or whatever you want to blame, the dog, the cat, the parents, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And then somewhere along the line, you've got to wake up, I think, and grow up. You had really fought against your family. You wanted an education. You loved school. You many times verbally were beaten down by women that were around you because of their indoctrination, their cultural positioning.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you had a door, a subtle door of opportunity open for you, and it was through an ad in a paper. What was that opportunity?
Well, opportunity was when my mom, you know, my parents believed that girls can go to elementary school and then stay home and do the housework and get married off. That was their plans. But because I hated, I'm sorry, I didn't like the work, doing the housework, that kind of showed me the opportunity that I, you know, for the wish or dream or to be successful so that I don't have to do things I don't like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I decided to become the PhD, because the teacher said if you become PhD, you are considered success. So I, even my, you know, at my childhood, that I had a dream to become PhD because I didn't like to do the housework. So.
Can't blame you there. I don't know any woman that jumps up and down over excitedly to say, ooh, goody, I get to clean the toilet. I don't know one that gets excited.
And another thing was after I graduated, you know, because I became so good at school, my mother changed her mind and decided to send me to junior high school and high school too. So it's like I changed my mind and changed my behavior and result, and then I was affecting other people around me to change my fate, my life. And but when I graduated from high school, you know, I didn't have any connections to the power or money, and I ended up working as a, you know, the, what is that? It's a factory girl at the wig factory and waitress, and it's those kind of jobs where society looked down upon. And because I was going through the miserable life again after my high school, that's when the when I saw the newspaper ad looking for a housemaid in America, I said, I jumped on it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, that's another thing. You know, people look at it, and they saw the same newspaper as I did. But because I was going through the tough time, and I was able to accept that, although you have to keep that in mind, even that kind of jobs had an amazing danger because about 70% of people got sold off on the prostitution, I mean, in those days. So I had to risk that, but still I didn't like the position where I was in Korea, so I got the courage to take that as an opportunity, and that became the amazing turning point in my life because America brought me the success and happiness.
I really think that the words that you have in the material you sent me is, they're so profound, because people were telling you that you might die, you might be sold into prostitution, and your response was, well, I'm dying here, so why shouldn't I die in America if I'm going to die? You really had this strength, this inner strength, and you had the good fortune to know a couple, Wilma and
yes.
Henry,
yes.
And they said they would sponsor you. Your parents worked for over a year to assist you to get the money because it was going to cost a certain amount of money. You had a $100 bill that you carried that your father gave to you at the last moment, and that was like $1 million in your mind. You had never had $100 before.
No. Never touched that much of money before in my life. And I'm so amazed that you've done such a thorough study.
I read. Before my guests come on, I always read their material. I didn't.
Yeah,
I wasn't joking when I sent you that email.
Huh.
Now, you make a statement, I think, that is very powerful, too. You say, today, And we'll go into how you got to your PhD in a moment. But you say, today you want people to trust in themselves and to follow their own inner voices. That you say, you should engage in deep dialogues with yourself to arrive at that final conclusion that is convincing enough to yourself that it moves you to act in a certain way. And you talk throughout your entire book about this, the two voices within you. The voice within you that says, you're stupid, you're a female, all of the things that were thrown into your heart and into your mind by the culture you were in, by the people who were frustrated with not knowing how to make changes for themselves. All of this was there, and then there was this other dialogue within yourself that said, you're smart, you're intelligent, you're attractive, you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. And I think that is extremely powerful. Now, let's move forward, because I know that, and Jen, I hope you can stay with me a little bit longer, if
sure.
that's possible. Wonderful. I know that you came to America, you decided you were going to go to college, you did all kinds of different jobs, and you went to a number of colleges. Eventually, you got married. And it ended up, you ended up marrying a very handsome man, and he was Korean also?
Yes. He just came from Korea.
So you marry this man, he's a martial artist,
mm-hmm.
and yet this marriage, out of this marriage, there is a beautiful baby girl, Jasmine, that you give birth to, and she is just the light of your world.
Mm-hmm.
But this man is not the light. He is like the darkness, because he does not like himself. Tell us about your marriage and how you ended up joining the army, for heaven's sakes.
Well, I really fell in love at the first sight. I guess I was just going for too shallow stuff, you know, for the looks. And he believed that, I mean, he had influence from the Confucius philosophy, too, and he believed that the subserviency of wives to their husbands, and also he seemed to believe that the wives need to be beaten up at least 3 or 4 times a year to teach them their place of subserviency. So he not only believed in that, and he practiced. So I was an abused woman and got beaten up by this Aikido black belt 7th degree.
Mm-hmm.
So that was amazing misery, and I wanted to take a revenge on him. I mean, it's a kind of a natural reaction, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to take a revenge on him, and compared to him, he was 5'11" and about 170 some pounds, and well built, you know, muscle, and I was only 5'2". And maybe about 110 pounds or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no match. So what I was thinking about it was, I wanted to take a revenge, and I didn't know how to do it. And then I start seeing in my, the universe rewards action, or not only action, or the universe says, your wish is my command, I guess. And showing me in my imagination that I saw him sleeping, and then I bring my knife and start stabbing on him. And from then on, you know, whenever he beat me up, or whenever I get so angry at him, then I start seeing that vision almost.
Mm-hmm.
Then from then on, I became more scared of me than his beating, because we tend to, you know, at the last minute, I think everybody has that killer instinct if that's gonna, you know, if the other opponent is trying to either kill you or kill your children, you will definitely kill the other person beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that instinct, and I knew if I continue on one of these days, I might lose my mind and I will really kill him. So I was so scared, and I talk to myself, to holding my just tiny baby and saying that, what has she done wrong for you to give her the environment where she had to grow up as a murderer's daughter? And it's just so not right. So I was looking for the exit and escape, And at that moment came to my mind about the U.S. Army to separate me and so that I can go through the divorce. And so that's how I ended up joining the U.S. Army. But in retrospect, that was another amazing, I'm saying amazing, opportunity, you know, turning point for my life. And that army so gave me the opportunity to learn Japanese fluently and to go to Harvard and whole nine yards, all came from the army. So in retrospect, I guess I thank him for giving me the courage to pursue something totally different.
Mm-hmm. And there again, these decisions, these opportunities that you took, mm-hmm. opened, as you said, all kinds of doors that enabled you to achieve your biggest goal, and that was established when you were a little girl, and that was to have a PhD. Little did you know you were going to be able to get one from Harvard. But let's backstep a little bit here. You were in this marriage. You have, during a period in 1972,
mm-hmm.
you start college,
mm-hmm.
and you ended up having to go to 6 different colleges.
Yes.
To be able to get your first degree. And this took how many years? 14 years?
No, 15 years.
15 years. It took
yes.
you 15 years to finally get your degree because of all the various choices you made. When you joined the Army, then you did something that many people would be surprised at, and that was that you were able to send Jasmine home to Korea. Your family relationships had improved a great deal. And you were able then to go in for training, and you were, you know, you weren't 19 when you signed up for the Army. How old were you?
No, not 19. I was 28 when I signed
28.
Up for the Army.
28. Okay. Yeah. I can just see 28-year-olds going through boot camp. I mean,
yeah.
that is a vision. That reminds me of the Goldie Hawn movie. Where she portrayed, you know, goes into the Army and wakes up and grows up. But the Army gave you a great deal of discipline. You had eventually the opportunity to become an officer.
Yes.
And you even ended up going over into the Middle East. But we're going to be taking a break in just a few minutes. So I wanted to cover this because people do not realize
mm-hmm.
many times the benefits of military training. And your daughter was so very, very important to you. You also had a son
mm-hmm.
who, you had Jasmine, the daughter, and Grant, I believe was
mm-hmm.
the name of your
yes.
son.
Mm-hmm.
And you made a choice at the time that he would go with his father, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was so painful experience.
But there's a happy ending to that painful experience.
Oh, yes, definitely.
A very happy ending, which we'll tell my audience about in a little bit. But you're here. You're in Fort Bragg. You, at one point in your military career, it was in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Yes.
An area that I'm somewhat familiar with. We have family that lives or has lived around in that area. And it's beautiful country. You were able to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought your family over.
Yes, my
so they could,
parents and yeah,
yes.
my brother and sister.
You brought them over into this beautiful home, and you have some wonderful, wonderful stories to share about that. But this brought a healing together for all of the members of your family. Now, you became a United States citizen.
Yes.
And that is something that was very significant. Did the other members of your family become U.S. citizens?
Most of them, except my mom and my youngest brother, you know, who is the retarded one,
mm-hmm.
the handicapped. And so, but other than them, you know, most all of them became American citizens. And I am so proud of that.
mm-hmm. Well, I can see why. Now, when you were in the Army, you're
mm-hmm.
at Fayetteville, North Carolina, working at Fort Bragg. You're going through training.
Yes.
That's going to send you over to the Middle East. And I love this story. There's an officer that is telling you, here you are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're well-trained, very disciplined, and they're warning all of the women that are going to be going over not to bare their legs and other body parts when you go out in the street in civilian clothes. And the statement was that, you know, women just were just not going to be able to communicate. And the irony was later on, you were a very significant communicator.
Yes. So that changed their belief just about 180 degrees. And the other, you know, male officers were asking, wait a minute, we were told that, you know, that the Iranian, I mean, the Egyptian and the
Middle Eastern
men would not deal with women to do any business. So we're supposed to support the male officers to, you know, set them on the front. But why is she's the only one who can make things happen with this, you know, Middle Eastern man?
Yes, fascinating stuff, isn't it? It's ignorance on both sides, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yes. Absolute ignorance. Now, you make a statement that officers in charge of leading subordinates must be exemplary in all aspects of life, including physical endurance, and you have to be able to take care of those that are under you. You are responsible for them. Mm-hmm. And this was pertaining especially to the soldiers of the 18th Airborne Corps, and it was one of, according to your statement here, one of the first of the Corps to be dispatched anywhere where war would break out. And so you had to be combat ready. You're 20 years older than those that are under you.
Right.
Oh, boy. And you had to get into shape, and that isn't fun.
It isn't. Definitely not fun. But I stayed on, and I couldn't be, you know, falling out of the formation of the running, and I couldn't show them weakness. So I struggled, and internally I was dying practically while doing the physical, you know, the training.
Mm-hmm.
But outside, I was smiling and telling my soldiers, hey, this is nothing. Come on, let's go. You know, this is feels good, and pain is, you know, helpful, and all those kind of lies, actually.
See, now you're free to say that. You didn't dare say it then because everybody would have fallen over and said, oh, thank heavens, I don't have to do anymore. Yes, and one of the things, though, that is very significant to me about this, it wasn't just your age. It was the fact that you had given birth to your daughter, Jasmine, just 8 months before, and you had had a miscarriage.
Yes.
1 month before having to do this. So you had gotten pregnant very shortly after you had given birth to her. So the miscarriage is a dramatic effect on your body, and there you are. You're smiling. You're in agony.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not asking for any special favors.
I was actually, you know, that's it, when I started my basic training, and I was dying, actually. And drill sergeants were yelling at my ears and telling me that you're worthless and we don't want you. And they did that to toughen me up mentally and, you know, spiritually and physically. But that was so painful, and I thought about the quitting, too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But then I told myself internally, you are born with a mission, and you are supposed to help the world to have more equal opportunities and save the people who were born into the misery, and it's not their fault, and trying to find the opportunities for them, and you will save them. And I was telling me all kind of, well, the simple words, I guess, lies, actually. I don't know, but I was telling myself, but our brain are, I guess, intelligent to a certain point. And my heart and my brain start believing what I was telling myself internally. And that became amazing encouragement and courage and power and energy. So that I became graduated from the basic training as a number one out of 200 people.
We're going to take a break. My guest is Jen Robertson. She's called in from Korea. Excuse me for interrupting you, Jen. We've got to go on a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. You're going to hear some more of this amazing woman's story. And if it doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious foods? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sivo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hello, this is Donna Sibo. We have a special guest today, Jin Robertson, who has called in from Korea. Jin's story about going from being an immigrant in the United States to eventually graduating from Harvard is something, it's not yet been published, but when I read her story, I felt I had to have her on the air because the story is a poignant one. I don't care who you are, where you are in the world. It is important for you to understand obstacles happen in life, period. It's what you do with them that makes a difference. And Jin Robinson, again, is my guest. Jin, let's pick up where you're in the Army. You learned when you were a little girl that if you had a degree, a PhD, that this was going to be very significant in your life. How in the world did you make a decision about Harvard? What was it about Harvard that just glowed for you and you said, that's where I want to go?
To speak about Harvard, we need to talk about the Army program called FAO, Foreign Area Officer.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so once you get accepted to that program, they teach you the language of the country you're supposed to go. And then they send you to graduate school and then take you to the country and have you tour around the country and the countries around that country to learn and become an expert of that country. And also they teach you advanced language of that country. This is just amazing program. So I was a very good officer, so with confidence, as soon as I finished my company command, and I applied for that, and I got rejected. I was in Korea at the time, you know, doing my company command. So I went to Washington, D.C., and I asked them, you know, why not? And they suggested in a way that they didn't select women because the country I was supposed to go to was Japan and Korea, and they considered it's like about the Middle Eastern situation, same
mm-hmm.
way. and saying that Korean men and Japanese men will look down upon us, and also that especially Korea was the colony of Japan for 36 years, and Japanese men would look down upon me, particularly because I was from Korea. So that was the reason they were offering that they turned me down, and I said, wait a minute, you know, Korean men and Japanese men are not that stupid, you know, they have their own ambition too.
Oh, you're gutsy, I love it, okay.
And I told them, you know, and in those days there was no Madame Albright or, you know, the Hillary Clinton or none of them available, so, I mean, it was before their time, and so I was telling them, if Thatcher, Prime Minister Thatcher, came to Japan or, you know, Korea, do you think a Japanese Prime Minister and a Korean President, they would treat her bad because she is a woman and they will not want to do the business with him, with her, you know? They are not that dumb. And if the reason they are treating Prime Minister Thatcher so well is because, I mean, she is a wonderful woman, but that's not the main point. Because the power of England, who's supporting her, those Korean president and Japanese prime minister are seeing that England power, not Thatcher.
Mm-hmm.
So what is wrong with America? America is a better country and bigger country and a more powerful country. And why are you afraid to try that out? And it took me one day and the day reversed that decision, and they gave me the opportunity to become the, you know, fail. So,
phenomenal.
And, yeah, and then I thought about, you know, I learned the Japanese, that they sent me to DLI in Monterey, and I became, I maxed out on listening, speaking, and listening, speaking, and reading. That's the test that you have to take, and it was the first time in school, you know, history of 48 years, and then I applied, I just thought about Harvard, because in America, Harvard means a great deal, right?
Yes.
Japan and Korea, greatest deal, probably. And so this is like a magic key to open any door. So at the age of 40, and I decided to go to Harvard, because I needed this Harvard background to persuade or make this another, you know, mission successful, because if I flunk, then the very, capable, outstanding women officers, you know, one path will be totally blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So because I had the bigger mission, that Harvard was not that scary. If Harvard was my ultimate mission, probably I would be too scared to apply to Harvard. But Harvard was only a tool for me to get bigger mission to get accomplished. So I applied to two schools, Graduate School of Arts and Science and John F. Kennedy School of Government, and both accepted me.
Yes.
So at the age of 42, I studied my master's degree with, you know, genius students of 20 years younger than me, and we competed the exactly same way, and I graduated with A-minus average. And the PhD, I really didn't need it in the Army. I don't need it for my, you know, work outside, but
mm-hmm.
it must be in my fate or something, you know, because I was keep on saying since sixth grade that I'm going to become a PhD. So suddenly, while I was at Harvard, I decided to apply for PhD program. And the first year I flunked, and next year I applied again and I got selected out of, you know, 16 to 1 ratio. So that's how Harvard came into my life. And because Harvard came into my life in that way, my daughter had, you know, aspiration to go to Harvard because, you know, when she was a young child, Korean, you know, major TV station made a documentary of me, and they asked her, what was your dream when you're a child? And she said, I wanted to become a clone of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up coming to Harvard, and she ended up joining the Army, and now she's a major in the U.S. Army. So.
Amazing. Well, you were an inspiration for your daughter. I want to mention to my audience that you were the first woman liaison officer in Japan, I believe.
Yeah,
and,
that's what I heard.
Yes, and so you have accomplished as an individual, as one person, quite a bit. And because of you, so many other young women have doors open to them. You are what I would consider a pioneer. That doesn't mean that you're 5,000 years old. It just means that you decided to take a journey in life, and you took those subtle opportunities of choice that you speak about right in the very beginning of your material. Now, here you are today. You have a wonderful life. You did retire from the Army because you could not get your PhD without doing that. And that was a big change in your life. What has been the greatest gift in the journey that you have experienced in your becoming a doctor, having the PhD from Harvard? With your life, where do you want to go from here? A lot of people would sit back and say, well, it's time to retire. Not you. I can't imagine you retiring. Why would you? What's your next step?
Next step is in Korea. I mean, just a second ago, you asked another question, too. You know, what's my biggest happy accomplishments? And there are so many young kids. And the people even beyond 7 years old, and they are finding new courage and new life. And they are realizing that we all have only one life to live, and they want to make the difference of whatever the, you know, life they have left because of what I did to my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the probably biggest prize you can ever ask for in life. And you are changing, as you said, you know, we are changing the people's life for the better. And so that was the greatest part. And now, not only in Korea, you know, I want to share that story, and I want to inspire and motivate and encourage the people throughout the world, starting from America.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my major next step. And I think the publishing books and even those books in Korea, and it changed a lot of people's lives, and then some of them were ready to commit suicide, and they decided to leave. And so I want to share that story in books and movies and throughout the world. And beyond then, when the time comes, you know, I will continue to build up, and I want to reach, go to that, become a Secretary of State of America, too. And because by working as a fellow, that is like, you know, attaché at the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
That's our job. And the working between the countries, I found a new talent that I am talented in making the countries, you know, make the deals and become very friendly and win-win situation. And I enjoyed it so much. So that's the one field I would like to pursue at the same time. And at the later on, I want to build an equal opportunity fund at the level of Nobel Peace Prize, so that after I pass away, then there will be a system where it can give opportunities to the people, or so people like me, you know, being born in the foreign outward country and rundown country at the bottom, even that person can have an opportunity to make not only their lives, but make the world a better place. So that's my dream.
Jen Robertson. Jen, do you have a website? We've only got about a minute left before I have to go on break again. Do you have a website that people can go to?
I have one in Korea, but I don't have one in America yet. But you can still go to my, you know, agent's website, www.celebritiespeakersentertainment.com. If you go in there, and there will be a lot of information about me, and you can also leave some words there and communicate with me through that website. And I definitely will let you know when I get my own in America in English.
Wonderful. My guest has been Jen Robertson. Oh, by the way, we said we'd tell you the happy ending with her son. They were reunited 16 years later, and the family now really has the joy of being complete. Jen Robertson has been my guest. This is a woman that has not yet published her book in the United States, but it is a story that is really greater than any fictitious publication could ever be. And I think, as she states, it is definitely going to accomplish her goal. Jen, thank you very much for being my guest today. and for calling in from Korea. We wish you nothing but the very, very best. God bless, and be happy, be well, and just enjoy the rest of the journey.
Thank you so much, and God bless you, too.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a little bit. Jen Robertson has been my guest. You'll be hearing more about her, I'm sure, in the coming months. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. Hey, the telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I want to let you know who's coming up next week. We've got a great lineup of guests. We're going to be talking on Monday with Janet and Greta. We're going to talk about how to eat, shrink, and be merry. Yes. Oh, these gals are delightful. They are absolutely delightful. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about food and how you can eat good food and still have a nice shape. You don't need to end up looking like a pudgy wudgy. Okay, and then on Tuesday, we're going to have an open mic day, and that is really going to be very, very nice because anybody and everybody will be able to call in on Tuesday throughout the entire hour. That's right. We're going to be able to take your call throughout the entire hour. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Joan King about cellular wisdom and women. And this is something that I think for you gals, you're really going to find her information quite meaningful. And then Neil Donald Walsh. Neil has been on my show a number of times, and he's one prolific writer. He's got a new book out titled When Everything Changes, Change Everything. So we're going to be talking with Neil. And then a week from today, we're going to have Lorraine Rowe, the Psychic Housewife, on the air, and that's going to be a lot of fun as well. So we've got a terrific lineup of people. Check the website. I will be putting up the listing by Monday of the guests that we're going to have during the entire month of July. We have got a super arrangement of people. Now, with having Jen on the show today, I feel that her message is such a poignant one. And even though I usually can give you the name of a book, and I didn't have it, this is sort of an unusual interview that I did today, her story was so significant. And even though we're only able to share bits and pieces of it with you, if it can inspire you to realize that your age and your gender has nothing to do with intelligence, who you are and what your dreams are matter. but you may have to work to accomplish what you want. It is not easy to take yourself out of certain cultural patternings. And we have them in the United States. People have them in Canada. They have them in every country of the world. But to be able to shift and to take time to really discover who you are as a person, that takes guts. It really does. It's easy to turn your life over to someone else and say, oh, you do my thinking for me. I was talking with someone just the other day, and they were so upset with one of their children. And this woman was telling me how this one child of hers, not a child, it's an adult, the woman is close to 40 years of age, she said she's married to a husband, and she doesn't want to think for herself. She doesn't want to think at all. The husband says, you look good in purple. She may look atrocious in purple. She said, oh, isn't that wonderful? She said, what they eat, what they wear, where they go. It's this kind of an attitude. And I know there are those of you listening that probably think that's the greatest thing since, you know, vanilla tea. But I'll tell you what, I don't care whether you're male or you're female. When you give up and turn your life over to someone else and say, you tell me what to do, you're making a big mistake. Your right of choice is taken away from you. When you turn yourself over to someone else and say, you do the thinking for me, that doesn't work, folks. It really doesn't. And too many people then turn around and will say, I'm a victim, I'm suffered, I've gone through this, I've gone through that. Oh, I shouldn't have had to go through this. Why not? Life is not fair. It isn't. And when you go through certain situations, you have a right to choose. And if you know of someone that's being battered, Jen went through that. Everything she'd been brought up with culturally said, you're supposed to be subjugated. This is what you're supposed to do. Her husband had been indoctrinated that way. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to beat the woman. This is appropriate. No, it is not appropriate. It is not the right thing to do. But unless an individual stands up for themselves and says, no, this is not acceptable to me, and makes a choice of having a better life, you're going to stay stuck. You know, there was a program I watched many years ago. It really left a very significant impression upon me. And it was a program where a reporter had, in his early 20s, was part of his dissertation at school, interviewed people in a ghetto. He interviewed 10. He went back 15 years later and found of the 10 people he had interviewed, of all different statuses in life, only one had moved out of this ugly neighborhood. Every single other person had excuses for why they didn't choose to leave. And what he really found out was they didn't leave because they didn't want to change. They were happy with their misery. That sounds tough, but that's what he discovered. It was very disappointing. We're out of time here. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, of your life. Take charge. Enjoy this fabulous weekend. We'll be back with you same time, same place on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes, and when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to Dr. Fred Bell in the Health and Sciences Show on bbsradio.com. Tune in or be tuned out.